Hey everyone, welcome to It's Shway, It's Schwarbridge, a Batman, Bat Fan, Bat Review, Bat Pod, Batcast. I'm Will.
And I'm Jack.
And I'm Jason Todd.
He's Quentin. You can't not say your name two episodes in a row.
He's trying to establish a bit.
I think my bit is gonna be that I'm gonna say a different name every single time to
to know your actual name.
We've established it's Quentin.
My identity is gonna stay secret until the final episode, where I will admit who I am, and it may even surprise you too.
Are you really Jason Todd?
I'm not sure myself. I guess we'll have to explore that together.
Okay, so for this exciting new episode, we have two subjects. One of them's quite hefty. So I guess let's just dive on in. We are reviewing Batman issue number one.
The OG.
Yeah.
Not technically the first.
This book contains five stories, actually.
Yes.
There's four stories, but the first two pages are dedicated to the origin story, which I guess is what we'll start with. Any thoughts on this? I understand if you don't, it was all right. Not much.
Let's give a big warning here for spoilers.
Batman. Yeah, if you haven't read Batman issue 1 or watched any Batman movie or watched any Batman show
or read any Batman comic or heard anybody talking about Batman ever,
how did you find us?
Yeah.
Batman's parents are killed.
What?
And I'll give you some time to pick up your jaws off the floor.
I have a question, Jack.
Yes.
Do they get more or less screen time than the Flying Graysons?
More.
I put this down.
More, I think.
More.
Right?
They
get one page.
No. Okay, here's what happened. Flying Graysons got one introduced on the same panel they died. They got one panel, and we made a joke about it. And one of you said, I think Bruce Wayne's parents got two. They got three. We were not off.
That yeah.
They get four. I'm looking right now. They get four if you count their corpses.
They get three alive.
We do. They got four.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So, then it shows Batman learning chemistry and doing karate, and then he's Batman now.
Now he's Batman.
Yeah, the owl, or not the owl, the bat flies through the window.
He got the name of Batman wrong. on a Batman.
It's an omen.
I think it's really funny, because normally the bat, like, slams through the window, like it, like, breaks it, like that's how it's been interpreted later on. This, it just kind of flutters in.
He left it open. I mean, it makes more sense, but...
Now,
yeah, that's what inspires Bruce to become Batman, is seeing a bat fly through the window.
I would just like to throw out there and just sort of brainstorm. What other things could have flown through the window that would have taken us in a completely different direction? And
I saw this before in like a joke. It's like the neighbors accidentally pitch a ball through his window, and he's like, "Baseball, Batman."
Baseball. That's fair. I mean,
a butterfly. I'd like
someone
that.
Was really
no,
mad
killer
at
moth.
They could throw a brick through his window. I don't know, like Brickman.
Brickman
would strike that much fear into
a boomerang flies through his window.
I'm scared of Brickman.
I want to make Brickman, Batman OC. Look for him on DC Universe Online.
So
I will.
I have a clarification question about this part, if any of you mm-hmm. know. So I know that Batman 1 is not the first appearance of Batman. That's correct, right?
No. Yeah.
Is this the first appearance of his origin story, or is that gone over in a Detective's Comics
issue? Believe it has already been gone over, but I didn't fact check that. I probably should have, but I believe they had already shown it.
All right. So this is just a rehash.
I mean, I'd have to imagine that this isn't the first we see of his origin story, because in Detective Comics 38, with Dick Grayson, his entire story sort of revolves around the fact that he identifies so much with, you know, experiencing the death of a parental duo.
This issue is a first for a lot of things, though. It's the first for the Joker first appearance. It's the first for Catwoman. In this, she's just called the Cat, but that is who that is.
First Hugo Strange appearance, I assume?
No, Strange is an old villain. I think he's like Batman issue... I was just about to say it, but I'm not sure. But yeah, he's from, like, he's a Detective Comics villain. Okay. He's old.
But this is the first and last we hear of Hugo Strange's Monster Men.
Sad.
They get referenced occasionally. Yeah. I mean, the Titans in Arkham are, like, direct, like, based on them.
Why don't we cut into the first story of this?
Yes, it is Joker's first story. I really like this one. I think this issue was front loaded with the good stories.
For sure. For sure.
Does anyone want to take the reins on a plot synopsis of this story?
Quentin.
Okay. So to describe the Joker's introductory story, he basically goes on a killing spree where he announces the time of death, and I'm decently sure method? No, he didn't say the method, but he would always announce the time of death of a bunch of random people around Gotham, and the police would rush in to protect them, sort of barricade them in, and in one way or another, they'd wind up dead, creating a caper for Batman to solve. He eventually does, catching Joker in the act and putting him behind bars.
Beautiful.
I really like the random old couple at the start who just hear it on the radio and are like, "Posh, posh."
Well, could you read their dialogue for us, if you have the picture?
"My, isn't it peaceful sitting at home like this? Nothing like it. Static." The radio starts staticking. Then Joker says his thing, and then, "Henry, did you hear? Henry Clardage, the millionaire to be killed? The famous diamond stolen. Ha, that's just a gag. Like the fellow who scared everyone with the story about Mars the last time. Ha ha, pay no attention to it, my dear."
I like the War of the Worlds reference in this.
I really appreciate
That's cute. But I also think it's very funny. Like, this is a very emblematic... The very first panel of these people is very emblematic to me of this entire issue, in that the description says, "It is night. Most homes, people listen to their radios." And then, "My, isn't it peaceful sitting at home like this?" Like, and then another line of dialogue to indicate that they're sitting at home, and then eventually the radio crackles on. But... there is so much to explain to you that, yes, these people are, in fact, sitting in their home, and nothing crazy is going on until the crazy stuff starts going on. It's just very verbose.
The dialogue is very repetitive. It is not succinct.
Oh, there is, there's a lot of examples of that, and I'm sure we can mention some as they come along, but I think they're quite funny.
I would say this entire issue's strong point is more narrative writing than dialogue, for sure. Because, like, a bunch of these capers are really entertaining from a visual standpoint and just sort of, like, for the arc in the story. But once you get into the nitty-gritty, like... I mean, I really enjoy the Joker's dialogue when he's just sort of sitting there talking to himself. But that's mostly just because it's very, very self-serving. It's a very different character than what we know today as the Joker.
And I'm gonna be honest, I kind of love him. Like, the design is iconic. It basically hasn't changed. He doesn't really look like a clown, which I've never really thought about till now. He doesn't really look like a clown, but he's so entertaining in this.
And he does go well, like, with the playing card gimmick. Like, he plays into that more than maybe sometimes you don't see Joker adaptations really go into the playing card, but they have one of the people is playing cards with the Joker, who has disguised himself as the police captain, which is quite a funny scene.
It's an incredible scene.
That might be my favorite panel of this. Actually, that's not true. Welcome to a new segment I'm just introducing called Favorite Panel.
We have to do this segment.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, we did this last time. My favorite one in this is the photo of Batman jumping down the stairs, and it looks like he's just, like, free-falling from, like, an airplane, but he just jumped down the stairs. Like, he got serious distance on it.
So, do you want favorite panel from just this section of the issue, or the
Let's do just this section. We'll break this up into four little mini-sections, okay. I think.
All right. Quentin, why don't you say yours while I think of mine?
I mean, of course my favorite panel has to be quite an iconic one. I'm going to go with the bit, it's very early in the issue, and it's where he's just sitting in that chair, touching
exactly
his
what you're talking about.
Fingers together. He has this look on his face that, it's so desolate. Like, he has no emotion, there's no smile, there's no nothing. It's just such a neutral expression on the Joker's face.
I think I'm looking at the same panel, and one thing I also love about this panel, is this the same one where his hair, like, it look like you can't really see that it connects in the back? So it looks like he has, like, shaved two lines through the
yep.
sides of his hair.
Yes. Yes.
That is a wonderful panel.
It's amazing. What about you,
Jack? Do you have okay. one you want to...
My favorite panel is one where after Batman has been kicked or punched off the bridge by Joker, they're fighting on a bridge, and Batman has been knocked off by Joker, and Joker believes to have killed him, but Batman comes up, and he's, like, climbing on like, a rock or something, and this art for this panel I actually really think is pretty cool. Especially for these old issues, you know, the art doesn't have the same, like, style. It's not as stylized as, like, newer comics, but I actually think the art is really cool, and then it is just completely, like, it is completely ruined by a massive, like, it's like Batman dramatically climbing out, but there's just a massive speech bubble that says, "It seems that I've at last met a foe that can give me a good fight. However, I'm not licked yet. Not quite." When the panel without any text would completely indicate what was going on, and
it's Dr. Seuss
really
poetry,
cool.
is what it is.
That line really points out something I wanted to bring up. Joker kicks ass in this
so
like,
much.
Like the fight with Batman when they fight on the bridge, Batman doesn't lay a hit on him.
He's good.
So good. This is not like the Joker of modern comics. This is basically like Agent 47 from Hitman,
yeah.
but if he was a clown.
So this same style, like this same assassination crime style, is utilized in another piece of media that I actually discovered today. I was watching through old episodes of Batman the Animated Series, and one
The Laughing Fish.
It's
entirely inspired by this.
Completely and totally. And a moment I'd like to highlight in that is just the moment where... So the plot of the Laughing Fish is that... I'm not going to go too far into it. But Joker basically wants to copyright fish. and somebody tells him no. So he throws a fit like a child and poisons him. And the guy that said no delivers this line to Batman, and he's like, "Yeah, everything's been going so crazy that I haven't even wiped off that stuff that they sprayed on me earlier." And Batman, who's been stoic this entire time, he stands up and he goes, "Get this man to a hospital!" And it's right before everything goes to shit. And I think it's the same sort of fear and awe that has just been, like, just this. Is scarring his fucking just ability to commit crimes out of thin air, stuff that is so thought out in advance that you can do nothing to stop it when it's in action.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's scary.
He's really good at crime in this. Like, I think it's very funny how that. So there are what, maybe, I don't remember the exact number. Maybe four victims in this.
I believe it is four.
All killed by the poisoning. Right? They're all of them are poisoned. Is that
one correct? Of them is shot?
Okay, one is shot.
Yeah.
But they always like after. So the first one, like Joker sends the threat, and then they just go, "Don't worry, don't worry. We're going to send the police," and the police just stand in a circle around that person until the designated time where they die of poisoning, which takes a while to come into effect. The Joker has already poisoned them before even sending the threat. And then, no, and just, it keeps happening. Like, people keep getting poisoned. And all the police do is they just stand in a circle around the chosen target. Like, no matter what, they don't adapt. And that's, I don't know that. And but Joker always does. He always comes up with some new scheme to get that person. And
yeah,
that's what makes it. That's what they suck. The police are trash.
The police may do frightfully little in this, but you know who also does not really like. He takes a good while to help. Fucking Batman. Literally, after the first guy dies, Robin goes, "Bruce, why don't we take a shot at this Joker guy?" And Batman goes, "Nah." He says, "Not yet, Dick. The time isn't ripe." And he lets another person die before getting involved.
Well, this is before Batman valued human life as much as he does now.
That's true, which leads me, like, there was a point where Joker was falling to his death, I mind you, and Batman does save him, and the line he gives is not, "I value human life, I'm not going to take a life, I'm not going to let someone die under my watch." It's, "You're too valuable a prize to lose." What does that mean? I don't
understand what that line means.
Batman, the clear old Batman, was not a crime fighter, he was a thrill seeker.
Mm-hmm. He had a point system.
Maybe that was the writer speaking through Batman.
Very true.
We now, wrote too good a villain.
I don't want to rush ahead to the next story, but
I kind of do.
Okay. We got it. I just want to talk about one last thing with this one. Miscellaneous goofs. There's one panel where Batman's gloves are colored skin tone, so it looks like he just has weird fleshy gauntlets.
Found that exact panel while you were talking about it.
There's one panel where Joker was accidentally colored his skin tone, which is cursed as hell. There's one more I wanted to say. I don't remember. We can move on if you want.
If you remember, just jump in. Yeah.
At any time.
And yeah, we can always go back. We're not on a strict schedule. Okay.
I'm excited though. This next one is probably my favorite.
It's so good.
Why don't you give a plot synopsis then?
I would love to. So, the dastardly villainous Professor Hugo Strange, one of my favorite Batman villains, has broken out of jail with a gang of insane men, who he then turns into monsters and six loose, not on Gotham, but in Manhattan, I want to add.
Mm-hmm.
And so Batman goes to Manhattan to stop him, both the monsters and, you know, Hugo Strange.
And then he is, great. And then what happens then?
Then Hugo Strange, you know, he falls in a river and Batman goes, "He's probably not dead," and then we don't see Hugo Strange again.
Exactly like the first story in which the writers decide, we want to use this guy again.
Yep.
Speaking of the fates of the villains, I think we should, I know it's not really the first thing that happens, but we should talk about the thing that stands out most about this story.
Oh god.
Is what happens to Hugo Strange's monster men? Oh. Batman kills all them. Of them.
Brutally. Brutally murdered.
Actually, that's not true. That is not true. Two of them kill each other.
Yeah, but them... Batman tricked them into fighting each other.
Batman incites them into doing so.
And do you want to know what he says when they die?
What does he say when they die?
They've killed each other, as I hoped they would. They are now dead. Two still live. They're in those trucks. One is on Daly Avenue and the other on Post Road. I can still catch them. Not only did he say he hoped those people killed each other, he then said, two still live, and then went to go change that.
My favorite part of that panel is him reiterating, they are dead. Like, yeah. He says, they've killed each other, they are dead. It's very funny in the way that both this comic is very over-explaining of everything, so that maybe, like, I would assume a child audience would be able to follow along as easily as possible, but then also just includes Batman murdering people.
Should we do another quick round of favorite panel?
Yes, please.
Okay, I went first last time. Someone else.
Jack, you want to go first?
Let me find one.
It's okay if you don't have one yet.
Quentin, you give him a minute. You stall.
Okay. I'm going to go, because I still haven't come up with my favorite, I'm going to go with a funny one, or just a funny detail. Hugo Strange looks like he has a dent in his head.
Oh, yeah.
The whole time, perpetually.
His design is not that different from, like, contemporary Hugo Strange design, honestly.
Oh, absolutely not. But it's very denty.
You know what his outfit is different from? His outfit in this issue, because literally there's one page where it changes three times. He starts out wearing a gray jacket, then it changes to a yellow shirt with a black jacket, and then it changes to a yellow shirt, green pants, and no jacket. And it's just all within one page.
And then a jacket again. And a fishing pole.
My favorite panel is when Batman has escaped Hugo Strange's trap, and Hugo Strange says, "What, you out?" And Batman goes, "Yes."
Yeah.
And that's the end of the conversation. And then the next panel, miscolored hands again. Classic.
I don't understand how you notice this every time, Will, but I'm impressed by it. I have a favorite panel if you
go for it.
Alright, so yeah, this is the when Batman encounters the monsters, the door opens and there are three monsters in the panel, and then there's a description in the panel that says, suddenly a door opens and there are three monsters, and then Batman says, the rest of the monsters, which I started to analyze this panel for a little bit, and I think I realized something about it. I think it has, there are monsters in it. Hugo Strange's on the right, so these three big guys, I think they might be Hugo Strange's monsters.
on this, I have another one I want to shout out real
is
quick.
Is it bulletproof clothing?
Yes. Okay, is that yours? Go for it.
No, it's not mine. Mine is so easy. Mine is so easy. It's the one we're all thinking of.
Okay, then I'll just talk about this real quick. Batman says, although your bulletproof clothing protects you from bullets, it doesn't from this. And then he just hits him with a stick.
Pipe!
Just hits him with a metal pipe.
Well, that's not a bullet, is it?
Bulletproof clothing in this story specifically, because they're like, oh, the monsters have bulletproof clothing, so they're invincible. Like, just, like, shoot them in the face, guys. Like, they are not wearing anything on their face, which is where your brain is.
That reminds me of one of my favorite moments from fan favorite animated series episode Heart of Ice, which we'll get to eventually.
I'm sure.
The chicken noodle soup.
Batman's real good at just using improvised weapons.
The only thing that can cure a cold.
If only someone had a chicken noodle soup-proof vest.
Yeah, so...
Okay, Quentin, say your favorite panel, then we can go about this in a more organized fashion.
it's the bit where Batman has the bat plane and Batman has a bat rope. And Batman bat lynches one of the monsters with his bat plane.
Not even an exaggeration.
Nope.
What does what does he say to the monster after killing him, taking his life?
He's probably better off this way. But I would like to highlight that before is the more pressing quote, I think. Much as I hate to take human life, I'm afraid this time it's necessary, as he's looking down the barrel of a gun.
Yeah, he's machine gunning a guy driving a truck.
He is.
Also, I would like to note that at this point in the story, Hugo Strange has been defeated. These are the two, these are the two giants who have been sent to rob a bank. So
they're not even giants, they're just henchmen.
But the giants are in the truck, right?
Oh, they are. Yeah. But I think that if I'm following the bullet trail as well, or that might just be Shadow, but it also hits the two in the driver's seat.
Oh, no, I think it definitely does.
Yeah, those guys are...
They're murdered.
They're in the target. Yeah. They're in the crosshairs.
But out of the sky, spitting death, the Batman.
Yeah, but he had to protect that bank, I mean.
It's true.
They could have taken money from the bank.
They were a threat to capitalism.
Another great thing Batman does in this. First of all, his smoking is back from our first episode. He's smoking a lot in this one. Also, on the radio, there's a lot of radio in this issue. It says, Professor Hugo Strange, the leader of the men who freed 5 insane patients from the city insane asylum. And Batman goes, insane men? Like, his response to hearing Hugo Strange broke out of jail and then broke out patients from an asylum is, insane men? Like, the concept is foreign to him.
Which is ironic.
Is that like a sexist comment from Batman? Or am I reading too much into it? Is the insane men a sexist comment from Batman, or am I reading too much into it?
I think so.
I think both is possible.
We'll get to that that issue in the next story.
Yes, very, very true. Also, does Hugo Strange have a whip in this?
I think so.
He never uses it. He just carries it around.
I assume that's how he keeps the big guys in line. I don't think that would work.
I guess it's not a bullet.
It's never really explained why these big guys work for Hugo Strange.
Here's the thing. He freed them from jail, and they are they're shown to be intelligent. Like, they talk to him. Like, they only say one line, but one of them talks to him once. He says, don't worry, Strange. Those banks are as good as opened right now.
Are you sure that wasn't a henchman other than one of the big guys?
Maybe it was. He's wearing the green and pink, which is what the monster men wear, but you might be right.
Well, anyways, does anyone have any closing thoughts on this story? Or do we want to move on?
Batman kills the last one like it's King Kong. He shoots him with a machine gun while he's on top of the Empire State Building.
That's not the Empire State Building.
It's in New York.
Yep.
It might be.
Maybe. I don't know. It's like orange.
That's true.
That is true. This does take place in New York.
Which is so weird.
Yep.
Hugo Strange is an international man. Or, I guess not international. Interstate.
In a nation, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how long does it take for him to get from Gotham to the... I mean, he takes the Batplane, right?
Yeah. I think, well,
can't
hold
be
on.
That long. I think Gotham is on the East Coast in, like, New Jersey.
I do think, well, hold on. Is Gotham...
I've heard.
I think Gotham's meant to be Chicago. Oh, New Jersey. Oh, that might be
right. You might be right. I'm not positive about this.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think okay, no. I think in Christopher Nolan's movies it's meant to be Chicago. So I don't know about the comics.
Well, this issue was actually heavily inspired by Christopher Nolan's interpretation of Batman.
That's so true.
Okay, should we move on?
Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk about the next story, which is
my least favorite.
Me too.
The stories have names?
No, they don't.
This is the Catwoman one.
Yeah, this one's not great.
No.
I can sum this one up since you all have put in your fair share of summary work. Okay, so Batman has sent Robin, because he's busy, he has sent Robin to... That's the actual reasoning, is he's like... He says...
Literally, yeah.
He says... I'd like to do it tomorrow night, but I have another job to do first. So he has something else that's more important. So he sends Robin to go guard this yacht where this rich lady named, what is her name? There's,
I'll just call Martha. Her rich. It's Martha something.
Miss Travers.
Martha Travers.
Miss Travers has this really expensive necklace that she's taken on a big party, and she's doing it on a yacht. And she has all these, like, bummy relatives who are trying to get money off of her because they lost in the stock market or gambled it away or etc. So Robin finds a note from one of them that is addressed to the cat and says, it's telling them to steal that necklace. And then they do steal the necklace. Like, Robin doesn't figure out, like, they stole it before Robin could do anything. And then some other criminals go to the boat, unrelated criminals, and try to steal the necklace, but it's already been stolen, so they just steal all the other stuff, and they leave. Those criminals are defeated by Batman and Robin. Batman does arrive. And then they go back to the matter of trying to find out who originally stole the thing, the necklace, and they find out it was a woman who disguised herself as an old lady, and that woman is the Catwoman. And then, so they capture her, and they start to take her away, but then she escapes, and Robin tries to go after her, and Batman accidentally bumps into Robin, so he can't go after her, and she escapes, and Batman goes, "Oh no, I accidentally bumped into you."
Anyway. Sorry about that. And then he's like, it's the smoothest transition into just this fucking...
And then, God. Yeah, Batman talks about how much he was into her in the final panel.
It sounds like Jack was exaggerating, but Batman literally says...
I did not
exaggerate
at all.
Batman literally says, "Oops, sorry, Robin."
Sorry, he bumps Robin.
Into him.
This story is so boring up until the last 10 seconds of reading it. It gets so funny for no reason.
This whole story becomes really funny when you think about something. So Robin went on this boat and is pretending to be like a waiter to, like, sneak around. Do you guys know how old Robin is?
Like, 12? How old is Robin?
He's 8 years old when he was first introduced. He's at most 9 here, working a job on this yacht.
He's also 9 years old fighting crime, so this is definitely child labor in some way or another.
So, I think what the weakest part of this story, as you all mentioned, is it's boring, but it's boring because they introduce a separate gang of criminals who is completely unrelated to the main of the story.
They literally do a side quest.
Yep.
But one of the funny things in that relates to Robin's age is Batman ties these guys up and, like, takes their guns, and he's like... he says, like, just to prove how bad these guys are without their guns, like, 4v1 Robin right now. Like Robin, like, they're 4v1ing you right now, and Robin beats them up, and Batman's like, Batman says, "Well, kids, there's your proof. Crooks are yellow without their guns. Don't go around admiring them. Rather, do your best in fighting them and all their kind. Which is a very bad message to send to children. They should not also try to Batman. Fight any criminals, regardless of whether or not they have guns. They
should. We need also a child Batman. Militia to fight.
Also, Batman broke the fourth wall to tell the audience yes. not to fight people.
And it's not guns. Like an ending panel. It's in the middle of the story.
At first, I thought he was talking to, like, an in-universe group of kids until I realized he was talking to me, the reader.
They're on a boat. They're on like a tiny boat. They're not on the main yacht where the yeah. rest of the story takes place. They're just on a little boat, like beating up these guys.
Similarity between me and Jack's analysis. I also did literally write Batman let the goons 4v1 Robin, which is exactly what Jack said.
Okay. So.
Anyone have a favorite panel?
we're actually pretty close to mine. It's after Robin has finished beating up the four guys. He's standing like Akuma from Street Fighter. Like, he stands up with all the guys laying on the ground or, like, crouching around him. And Batman's reclining in a chair going, tisk, tisk. It's just beautiful.
Very menacing Robin.
Incredibly.
What about you two?
I can go ahead and say mine. So right after, I never explained this plot point because it doesn't really matter, but right after this this fight with the goons, they go back onto the yacht to figure out who stole the necklace. And Batman goes to a costume party. As Batman, which is a pretty funny bit, I'll admit.
I think I know where this is going.
But the first panel of introduction for that for the costume party is just a wide shot of various people in costume, and one of the guys really close is dressed as a clown, and his face is just quite funny to me. He has like black lipstick and like a black nose, like not a red nose, like you might expect. Have you guys seen this guy? Like
I know exactly. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at him.
This
right
guy is
now.
A little uncanny. Like, his eyes don't really make sense. But he's just like a very emphasized character. Like, he's very large on the panel. Not a real character. Like, he's not important. But he's just, I just enjoy his one moment in the sun.
Quentin, you got one?
I have the ultimate one. It's towards the beginning of the story. The description for the panel is Dick pumps one of the regular stewards.
Yes, I know, this is so good.
This man, blonde hair, an interesting looking baby blue suit, the most lines, like, the most creases I've ever seen on a human face in a comic panel in my life. He has, his forehead is creased not once, not twice, but three times. It's so interesting. He looks like Sinestro in a couple of ways. And plus, he's got this weird thing on his lips, where it makes him look like he has a very pencil mustache, but he does not, because he's a child.
It looks like he has four eyebrows per eye.
Yes, yes, yes.
This entire issue, I think I've just now realized why I don't like it. Nothing happens. It is literally a book of coincidences. Like, the guy who writes the note to the cat tries to throw it overboard, and then the wind happens to blow it into Robin's hand.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a bit lucky.
Complete luck. The only reason just Robin is here is because Batman just so happened to have something else to do. Another group of goons just so happened to show up.
What? What do you think Batman was doing? What do you think he had to do? Because he showed up. Like, he came anyways.
Was he fighting Hugo Strange?
Was Robin not there? I thought Robin was there.
No,
he was not there.
Robin wasn't in that one.
I think he would be objectively horrified by the actions that Bruce.
Oh, yeah, you were right. Robin is not present. Maybe. That's an interesting, that makes sense.
Batman shows up here after a long day of gunning people down with a machine gun.
Yeah, but no, there are a lot of coincidences. To use the wording of the story, a series of ironical jokes take place. It's wonderful.
Do we want to go over the ending of this story?
Can
yes, please, Will.
So, we didn't bring this up because it's not interesting at all, but there's an old lady here who's constantly talking about how her ankle hurts. And it turns out it's not an old lady. It was Catwoman in a wig. And so the bandage around her ankle is where she hid the jewel. And then her partner, Denny, pulls a gun on her and Batman. And Batman knocks him out just in one hit. And then the cat tries to hit on him. And he says, "No, I'm taking you to jail." And then she jumps overboard. And then the whole thing where Batman accidentally runs into Robin, letting her get away, happens. But the most impressive thing about all of this is Batman takes off her wig to reveal that it's the cat. And her dress magically changes colors and into a different dress.
Yes.
Wait. I didn't remember this. Does anyone want to read Batman's line?
Oh, I was literally just about to.
I didn't read that for some reason.
You guys didn't read that? I must have inserted that
like today. Because I thought we were saving this.
No.
Please.
My brain.
Okay, yeah. So Batman is taking off her prosthetic makeup wax. And Catwoman goes, "Let go of me." And Batman says, "Quiet or Papa Spank." Which is just glorious.
I can't believe that isn't edited. Like, that's real.
I thought we were holding out on this. I'm so happy I got to see your guys' reactions live.
My mind, I watched the action happen. I heard her line. I remember objectively thinking, this comes off a certain way because of her line. I don't think my brain registered what he said on purpose until you brought it up and made me, have to face the actual reality that wasn't edited.
It seems like some fan added it in a meme or something.
It's like the memes of things Moon Knight says.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh my god. Okay.
And we could close off by going on some of the things Batman says at the very end. I'll just go ahead and read out the last panel
by all means.
From Batman. That proves he definitely accidentally knocked into Robin, not intentionally. He says, "Lovely girl, what eyes. Say, mustn't forget, I've got a girl named Julie. Oh well, she still had lovely eyes. Maybe I'll bump into her again sometime." So Batman has a girlfriend, or I don't think a wife, but he has a girlfriend.
I think, actually, she's not in this issue. I do think, it might not be Julie... I think, issue number 3, we meet Bruce's fiance, and she sticks around for, 20 issues and then disappears forever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Real nice behavior, Batman. Just letting a criminal get away because you think they're hot, and then...
Wait. And her name isn't Julie?
No, Julie's his girlfriend.
Okay, I thought you said...
I don't know if I don't remember her name. It might be a different character. This might just be a throwaway name.
I'm researching.
But I do know he, it will be established he has a fiance pretty soon.
Okay. Early issues.
a moment of silence while we all look it up.
I mean, I found an article from 2012. Bane's plan to bankrupt Batman doesn't make any sense. Did the Justice League just run out of money? Oh, no. I accidentally looked up Batman finance early issues. Not fiance.
Julie Madison is originally portrayed as an oft-imperial associate slash actress who dates Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I feel like I've seen her face before.
Yeah.
Huh. She was in Batman and Robin.
That's her? Good lord. I feel bad for this person.
Honestly.
We have a lot of... This is all stuff we could get to someday. The Bane, first of all, the Bane plan. That didn't work.
Yep.
And then Batman and Robin.
Do we want to move on to the last story?
So badly. So yes. Badly. This is a good one. Not a good one. Maybe my third.
Who wants to read it? Like, give us a description. Anyone?
Okay, I'll do the description then, if no one else will, even though I just did the last one.
Go for it.
All right.
So this one's called The Joker Returns. And in it,
the
Joker...
only one with the title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's Joker returning, and he basically does what he did in the last one again. And by basically, I mean he does what he did in the last one again. He kills people via poison after announcing their names on the radio.
Yep.
I don't know how he has access to the radio and why no one tried to stop it while he was briefly in prison. But he does. And then he fights Batman. He gets away. Some guy goes on a speaking tour about how Joker is bad. He dies. And then Batman has an idea to get Joker, where he devises a plan with Commissioner Gordon as Bruce Wayne to do a fake Ruby to bait him out. As if he didn't announce his crimes beforehand anyways, so you don't really have to bait him out, but then him and Robin take down Joker. And they think they kill him, but they don't.
Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Joker, I feel like we're never going to have less to say about this one, because it's going to retrace a lot from the first story.
It is the Joker, exact same story.
Joker really kicks ass this one.
Honestly.
He picks up... When he's fighting Batman, he picks up a battle axe off the wall that the book calls a mace for some reason. And he swings it... Like, he goes for it. And he knocks Batman out and then runs away. And then the police try to arrest Batman because, as we've established, he's a murdering lunatic. But he gets away.
A lot of Scooby-Doo-esque hijinks in this one.
Joker hiding in a mummy.
Yeah, I was about to say.
A mummy case.
His secret hideout being in a graveyard underneath a tombstone. Which... How?
Shall we play our final round of favorite panel?
Yes, let's do it.
I have one in mind. Should I start us off and give you two a minute to look?
Do it.
Mine is definitely, so as mentioned, Batman fights the police because, you know, they're trying to arrest him because he is a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
He does jump out the window and then do, like, a cool flip onto the roof. And it's a photo of a police officer looking through the window going, "Gone, not a sign of him. The Batman, what a man." And then, like, Batman, like, literally, like, hiding, like, a foot away from him.
Is this the first time that Batman and the police have a conflict in this issue?
In this issue, yes.
So I think that's kind of the start of a tradition. Because in all the other ones, he's basically just a police officer. Like, he works with the police at all times, but in this issue, one of the police men tried to capture and unmask him, mm-hmm. so he has to escape from them.
Oh, that's a good panel.
My favorite panel is kind of mid. I think it's funny, but it's not like an all-star favorite panel, I don't think, but I want to mention this. I talked a little about the speaking tour guy, and I just want to talk about his introduction panel, because the description reads, failure of the police to capture the Joker moves a performer, Edgar Martin, to public speeches. And he says, if the police can't do it, we must. I tell you, this fiendish criminal must be caught. And someone says, he's right. The Joker sure is making the police look silly. I just find the idea that this guy can really rile up a crowd by just going like, the Joker, man, he sucks. Stop killing people. Someone needs to do something about this. And he's like, if you've ever seen like a picture of like Lenin during the Russian Revolution, he's in the same pose. Like, he is a true revolutionary out here. Like an extremist just going like, guys, the Joker. And everyone's like, oh, yes, this guy is such a speaker.
Quentin?
Oh, I definitely have mine. I think this characterization of the Joker is, it's that perfect mixture of flair and efficiency. If at first you fail, the good way, the way that you intended, you'll try something else, as is demonstrated in this panel, where he's failed to poison these policemen, and he says, if my Joker venom don't get you, bullets will. And he guns down three police officers, one of which grabs at his heart. His gun goes flying through the air in a way that I'm not sure is physically possible, given the trajectory. I think that if we ran a physics, like a thorough physics examination on that, I
wouldn't check out.
But it's just wonderful all around, and I like these very. They all look like they have gas masks on, because they do. Oh shit, they do.
Quentin.
but they're never drawn in detail.
No, they're not.
Yeah, that is fair. That is fair.
Again,
there's never like a clear shot where you can see, oh, these guys have gas masks.
I will say something about this story in particular. The first three I reread in full, because I did read issue one like 3 weeks ago, and for the actual recording.
When we first agreed to this.
Yeah, I reread this issue. But I did not reread the full of this story. I reread the beginning, and then I reread the very end, which I'm very excited to talk about the implications
of. I think we should do that next, because the middle of the story is just the first issue again. Yeah. Does anyone want to talk about this ending?
Yes.
Go for it.
So, the Joker is caught, and there is... What I will say is admittedly quite an epic chase sequence.
Robin falls off a roof.
He does fall off a roof after doing some very good high-flying... Okay, I forgot about what happens when Robin falls off the roof. So, he falls onto an open awning and bounces off of it back up onto the building.
Joker's on the ground.
No, he's on the ground.
On the ground.
Joker is on the ground.
Back up into the air, onto the Joker, with the quip, mind if I drop in on you. Wonderful, very tasteful, Dick Grayson's
and
part.
And he kicks the gun out of Joker's hand.
Kicks the gun out of his hand. Now, this forces Joker to utilize one of his greatest weapons, which he's very proficient with and couldn't, like, this master criminal wields a knife.
Green knife.
Green knife.
It's a green knife.
It's a green knife. That's very important. It's a green knife. He starts stabbing. He starts stabbing at Batman. Batman steps to the side. The killer clown stumbles forward into the building, driving the knife into his own chest. The Joker kills himself, and at first he's very unsure of it, and then he starts hysterically laughing, which...
As he is known to do.
As he is known to do, but reading this out phonetically, you've got ha ha ha, the Joker is going to die, ha ha, the laugh is on, the Joker, ha ha ha, laugh. And he just says the word laugh.
Clown laugh.
Clown laugh.
Clown laugh. Clown laugh with an exclamation mark.
I might want to change my favorite panel to the one where he's dying from the stab wound and he just says clown laugh.
If anyone remembers from last episode, the Willy Watt emergent scene in which a background character says wah-ha-ha-ha out phonetically.
Yes. I also quite like this quote from Batman where he very, like, gives a very existential look at... I mean, the quote itself, Robin says, "Look, still grinning in death," and Batman goes, "Yes, and when the flesh is gone, the grinning skull will still carry the sign of the Joker into eternity."
That's fucking cool.
It's very metal out of nowhere.
This last chase would actually be really cool. Like the whole, like, Joker stabbing himself and, like, all that is, like, pretty hardcore. Like, it's pretty cool.
Very.
I would like to talk about the last two panels, though.
Yes.
Which are very funny in different ways. The second to last one, the police go over and get the Joker, and a doctor goes, I just examined this man. He isn't dead. He's still alive. He's going to live. Which I think is very funny for a doctor to declare someone alive. He isn't dead. He's alive. He's going to live.
And he's also very distraught about this.
Yeah.
As he should be.
Fair enough. It's
a bad gift. And then the last panel is golden rules for Robin's regulars.
Robin's hidden sick story.
Is his readiness, obedience, brotherhood, industriousness, and nationalism.
The last word of Robin's regulars code has not aged well.
Okay, let me... I'm very sorry for my laughing. Let me try that again for those of you listening. Readiness, obedience, brotherhood, industriousness, nationalism.
Nationalism.
Yeah.
Anyway, it then just shows a photo of a little boy walking an old woman across the street while Robin creepily stares at them from a distance.
Just trying to teach people to be nice and say that they're... And just be like, when they do their good deeds, say that they're, like, a member of the Robin's regulars. Which would be very funny. Imagine if someone, like, helped you, like, cross the road and they're just like, yeah, I'm a big Robin guy.
You know what? Everyone at home... Here's my challenge for you. Before the next episode comes out, which could be fucking forever, do something and then tell someone you're a Robin regular. And then tell them what it stands
for.
Explain
the acronym, yeah.
Yeah, tell them that it's readiness, obedience, brotherhood, industriousness, and nationalism.
You can change the last one if you...
You can?
Guys, I'm adding this to the list of episode ideas. We gotta write a new Robin code.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. It's time to do what this show's about. Is this issue Schwer or Schwarbage? Jack, Quentin, me.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if you want me to go first, I will admit I like... There are definitely aspects of this issue that are very good for the Batman character. Like, I mean, Joker is obviously a great character to introduce into the story. I think, as I mentioned, some of the parts, like, specifically that sequence you're talking about at the end, the chase, are really cool and, like, actually, like, just interesting narrative moments. But, like, just mechanically, it is not a very well put together work, by at least by modern standards. I know comics have changed a lot since 1940 when this comic came out, but man, it is so wordy. The art is often has mistakes. There's so much redundancy in the dialogue and in the descriptions. It's just like, and not to mention that specifically the Catwoman story has some boring parts, and I would even argue that the Hugo Strange story, while great in theory, has its weaknesses. And so I'm just gonna have to say it's schwarbage, even though it has some glimmer of goodness in it.
All right.
I'm gonna have to come in with, I don't think I have laughed at a comic this much in a very long time. And for all of the planned comedic moments, I'd say some of them hit, some of them did not. But looking at this objectively, it might lean more towards the schwarbage side. Looking at it from a personal enjoyment side, it's definitely a schway. If we're looking at it from a 1940s comic lens, this is definitely a schway. So I'd say that's a 2 out of 3 for me, an enjoyable time all around. Go read Batman issue 1. I would thoroughly recommend this to anybody. That's
all right. Yeah. So I think the Joker story in this is fantastic. They're all a bit wordy. If you skim through this, it triples the enjoyment, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a skim instead of a read if you are interested. I think Joker story, good. Hugo Strange story, like half good. Catwoman story is bad, and then the last Joker story is just fine. It's whatever. But I think overall, plus the origin for new people hopping in, because this is, you know, where they wanted people to hop in, this is just like this is Batman. And so I think I'm going to give this a shway, making it officially shway.
I think that's fair enough. I respect being outvoted there. I'm happy with that result.
Gorgeous.
All right, that wraps up issue 1. Shall we move on?
Yes, we got a bit of a bonus. Not really bonus, but we have an episode.
We have another topic that is not as meaty as the first one.
No, not quite.
Why don't we have
Quinn
introduce it, because I believe it was your pick, Quinn.
I mean, we needed something. Just a little bit of something to pad out time, and I'd recently...
It turns out we didn't, but we already
No,
committed.
Absolutely not. I had recently watched Batman the Animated Series Season 2, Episode, I think it's 8 or 9, Baby Doll. And
so that's what we all watched.
That's what we all did watch. I had two very distinct viewings of this episode, one with a normal temperature and one with 103 degree fever. So my notes are incredibly different depending on which viewing we're talking about. But to give a short and to the point description, once upon a time, way back in the day, there was a sitcom. The title of the sitcom, let me get the description up here, the official one. Love That Baby, TV sitcom. She is an actress, the baby doll, the name of the episode, the titular character, is an actress who has a rare disease that stops her from physically aging. So she was the titular baby doll in fucking Love That Baby at 20 years old. Before she split up the original cast to participate in a stage rendition of Macbeth. hijinks ensue. That doesn't work out for her, so she gathers everyone up and plans a group suicide with the entire cast.
I think you're deviating from the story of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's
it is what happens.
It is what happens. And then Batman tries to solve the caper. Batman and Robin.
Oh, okay. I think you mislead people when you say gather everyone up and plan a group suicide. She kidnaps everyone and tries to murder them along with herself.
I mean,
Jack.
Yeah.
Killing other people along with see what you mean.
No, yeah,
I don't know.
So, I mean,
it's involuntary suicide.
There's a difference between coercing people into a group suicide and group murder. I guess that is true. Suicide, one part. Murder, seven or eight parts.
Five parts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but any general thoughts?
It's a profoundly strange episode of Batman animated series.
I really like this character, though.
Yeah.
I don't... Okay, I'll hold on to this, but know that I have something... I have a little tangent I want to go off on later on. Her condition is horrifying.
Honestly.
It is a real thing. It doesn't work like this in the real world. It just... Your muscles don't grow as well. But, like, she's stuck as, like, a toddler forever. That's scary.
Yeah.
It is a genuinely, like, it does give her a genuine, like, somewhat compelling villain origin. And it ends up being this episode ends in a very quick way. Like, it doesn't end with Batman taking her to the police. It ends with Batman consoling her after she is basically crying about the fact that she'll never be able to grow up physically, which is quite, like, serious and pretty, I don't know, it makes a even though this episode is incredibly goofy, really.
It's an emotional climax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love me some Summer Gleason. You guys remember Summer Gleason?
Summer Gleason.
Who is Summer Gleason? I don't remember.
It was fake Vicky Vale, like the reporter lady who had the VHSs. That's yes. Not Vicky Vale. Her name's Summer Gleason. Gleason.
Yeah, Batman has to go to this lady to figure out more about the actress whose name is...
Mary Doll.
Mary Doll.
And her supervillain identity is Baby Doll. Amazing. Batman writers, you did it again.
The geniuses who came up with Victor Freeze come up with another one.
Yeah.
Shout out to my favorite Batman named villain, Pamela Lillian Rose Isley.
Who gets a mention in this episode. If you remember. What's the, So, that's the part where Robin is watching reruns of the show. And he says, remember when we were tied up?
I have the
up?
Exact quote.
Okay, you say it.
Remember when Poison Ivy had us tangled up in the vines, the ones with the really sharp thorns?
Yep.
And then Batman says yes, and then Robin goes, this is worse. He's just fucking watching TV.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about Spunky?
I love Spunky so much.
Dude, Spunky's my favorite character. They literally made a Scrappy-Doo for their fake TV show.
Yeah, so Spunky is this little kid who comes onto the Baby Doll show after ratings are dropping, and he's like this seemingly the same age as Baby. But he's like an actual kid. In real life, he grows up, and he just, like, his role in the show is to just dunk on Baby. And his name is Spunky, which is really funny.
And I if I were to make an edit of this, so Spunky gets kidnapped like the rest of them, and then Baby Doll puts, like, a bomb in there to kill all of them. It's a stick of dynamite. and then Spunky grabs it in his teeth and throws it out of the room. And then it's revealed that it was actually Robin in a Spunky disguise. Mm-hmm. If I were in charge of this, Spunky would have just clutched out the death trap.
That would have been so... I mean, that would have really padded out the Spunky character. I mean...
When that happened, it made me realize that Spunky actually never appears in the episode.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Watching him on a screen. Yeah, which is really sad. Because Robin mentions having talked to him, but they never show him. They just show Robin's imitation of him.
Spunky. Mm-hmm. Can I go on my tangent now?
Yes.
Yes.
The goons. What are they doing?
Oh,
first
yeah.
First of all, the two male goons, like with the machine guns, they're based on Willie Gilligan and Captain Jones from Gilligan's Island. That's a fun piece of trivia.
Oh.
But also, what are they doing? She's not, like, robbing banks. They're not getting paid. Do they just like the show? Do they just like her? Why are you doing this?
I thought about this. I spent some time thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, let's also mention there's one lady goon.
Oh, like, yeah, who, I was holding
on
to
Mirian.
And she
is really badass and competent.
Honestly.
Like, she's
Mirian?
She
Mirian kicks Batman and Robin's ass, and it's not even close.
So, I thought the only explanation is that she must have, like, just a load of money from the show. Like, she's just really rich, and so she's able to hire three goons.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. just out of pocket. That's the only assumption I can reasonably make.
Mirian says it's a living, but I feel like it's Gotham. You guys can just find someone who will pay you better than Mary Doll.
Maybe she's really rich from this show. Even though the rest of her career was a failure. I don't know.
Surprise me.
I mean...
Anyway, yeah, Mirian might be my new favorite Batman villain.
She goes so hard. She's, like, she beats the shit out of Robin.
She also, like... has downed Batman, who basically just gets her to tricks her into flying jump kick through a wall, which takes her out. But she is like has them on the ropes for a good while.
No gadgets, she 1v2s Batman and Robin. Like if no gadgets were in the play,
she is a better martial
if
artist.
If they turned items off,
she's.
I think going off
upset.
Of that. We can talk about the final fight between Batman and Baby Doll, which happens to be in an amusement park where she flees to after Batman foils her plans with the rest of the cast.
Love Batman at amusement parks.
That, I mean, that's something I gotta bring up. I feel like half of the time spent in any given animated series or otherwise, Batman-related media is spent in an amusement park. I would like to see if the designs match up and if there is one, like, Gotham amusement park standardized design or if it's just a bunch of just the bullshit layouts.
If Gotham is just, like,
full
party city for children.
Just chock full of amusement parks. It's every other corner.
That wouldn't surprise me. Although, I think people would start to see amusement parks in Gotham as in bad taste after a while. After a while,
of
having
all the
Joker.
Clowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanna... Okay, the mirror hallway scene gets to me every time.
Yeah.
At the end of this episode, Baby Doll goes into, like, a hall of mirrors. First of all, Batman chases her through a ventilation, like through a tiny, like, tunnel and, like, vent thing. It kind of changes how it looks. It's not supposed to be a vent, but it kind of looks like that.
Batman vents, yeah.
And that's kind of... I thought about that. I'm like, that'd be scary. Like, imagine if you're playing an Arkham game and you're crawling through a vent, and then a child pops out and shoots you and then runs away. That's scary.
Imagine being a child-sized person being chased by Batman.
Anyway,
she
ends up in the Hall of Mirrors, where in one of the mirrors she sees an adult version of herself.
Oh.
And it wrecks her, and she just starts shooting all the glass. First of all, her gadgets really cool. I like the exploding basketball, felt very Sportsmaster. Gun Doll, I like Gun Doll. And she uses Gundal to shoot all the mirrors, and there's only one left that shows her as an adult, and she had run out of ammo, and she just starts crying, and Batman pats her on the head, and it's very sad. And then the episode just ends, and it makes right you to credits.
On a little bit of a less serious note, but about the same section of the episode, I think how much Batman struggles to chase and defeat her. In fact, he never really actually defeats her. She just defeats herself emotionally. Is an extreme indictment of Batman as a superhero. I think if anyone wants to say that Batman could beat Superman, I would point them to this episode to prove them incorrect. Like, with prep time or anything, like, this episode just proves, like, no, he could not.
If we look at the animated universe continuity, we get some competing data, and Baby Doll uses a baseball gun, like for like a carnival game, to bring Batman to his knees because she keeps shooting him with baseball. And then later on in Justice League Unlimited, Batman dodges Darkseid's Omega Beams, which travel at light speed and disintegrate their target.
He wasn't fast enough to dodge a baseball, but he could dodge the Omega
Beams. Batman could dodge the heat-seeking light-speed lasers and then is brought to his knees by a three-year-old throwing baseballs at him.
Okay. But does that make the Omega Beam, or does that make Batman... Like an inconsistently powerful person in the lore.
No, I think Baby Doll's just goated.
Just goes so hard.
Just incredible. Yeah,
it's not that Batman couldn't beat Superman, it's that Baby Doll could easily.
I mean,
you're right.
That's the only other person that has gotten close to like achieving the feat of murder Superman is around the same shape and size of Baby Doll. And that would be,
McSpitlick?
No, I was about to say Toyman. When he sent him into the future.
Oh
yeah. Still animated continuity.
Yeah.
Okay, do we wanna wrap this up with a final round?
I would like that.
Okay. Me, Quentin, no, you guys decide. I've decided every time.
Okay. Let's do Will, me, Quentin.
Okay.
Okay. This episode, it kicks ass. It's so good. The goons are great. That's, you know, my favorite part of any Batman material. Shout out to Bob. Yeah, it's Shway.
Okay.
I like this episode. It's probably not in my top 10, like, animated series. But, I mean, it's in a show that is pretty... consistently good, not always, but usually good, and this is a episode that has a pretty fun gimmick. It has fun moments with Batman and Robin, like good dialogue. It's pretty well paced. It's just a fun Batman adventure, pretty on the light side, I guess, compared to something like Joker. But then it actually has a emotional climax, which is pretty interesting. So I'd enjoy. I wouldn't say watch it as your first episode of Batman the Animated Series, but I would not skip it if I were watching this show. So I'll give it a Shway.
Quentin, is this unanimous?
I've got to say, it's hard to get a perfectly good bottle episode in the animated series. You have a lot of one-off adventures. You have, like, The Mechanic. You have Batman in My Basement. They tell their own stories.
Fuck Batman in My Basement.
We'll get there. I'm sure we'll get there. But what really makes this work is the performance. I think the moments where she went from her entire Baby Doll identity to like being a human being and a person, like where Chills. Her accent changed, where she dropped the voice, that's what really got me. And I'd like to take a second to talk about just this entire how this is manifested in her mind and in her identity, because obviously her physical appearance got her onto the show, and her acting prowess allowed her to, you know, just sort of be an adult playing a kid, and she got really into that role. And I'm sure she developed some sort of, like, that was a chip on her shoulder. But everyone sees this as her being an attention seeker when she eventually leaves to become a, to become an adult, to become an actress, to become validated in her, like, being an actual adult and considered as such. So it's just an interesting dichotomy between how people perceive the things that she's doing, how she perceives the thing that the things that she's doing, and what she actually is doing at any given time. I think that this is, from a writing standpoint and from like a visual standpoint as well, a shway.
I was like, oh man, this is a really good analysis, and then you just end it with "this is shway." God, we have a good podcast.
This will be analysis in the year 2040, like academic, like literary papers.
Yeah,
that's our first unanimous shway, I believe.
Oh man, it's a good one. If it is, I don't think we unanimous first time.
Yeah,
I think this is, I think yeah, a good one. Hey, I've done great intros this time and last time, and Jack did the outro last time. Quentin, you wanna crack at an outro?
Yeah.
Okay.
We bring the shot to Batman flying in the sky. The air is calm. He is sitting in the cockpit of the Batplane. He looks up at the clouds, and he just mutters under his breath, "He's probably better off this way." That's the show. That's the show. He lynched someone. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's wild.
It's so incredible. I cannot talk about that enough.
He's a psychopath.
We hate Batman here.
Fuck you, Batman.
Fuck you, Batman.
Fuck Batman's in my basement.
We'll get to that, Will. We'll get to that.